Hi, Jen.
Hello, Sarah.
I feel like we haven't, like, just been us for a little while.
Because we haven't. We've been us and other people, us and Trailblazers, regular people plus Trailblazer.
I know. We have a big Trailblazer interview coming up this week.
We do.
It's a secret.
All of them are. People must hate us. They have no idea what the joys that are in their future.
But all I'll say is this, everybody, like, when the Trailblazer interviews come out, people just are so delighted because it's a surprise. It's like a little present to everyone from us every time we put one out.
And they are delightful. So it's nice to share them with the world because it's the way we felt when we did them.
Yeah. I mean, last week was a big week for everyone. It's Beverly Jenkins and Vincent Virga. So I think what was cool about last week for me was largely everyone knows who Beverly Jenkins is, and largely very few people in romance know who Vincent Virga is. And so if you are reading Trailblazer books after you listen to the episodes, let us know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really curious about, you know, did people run out and read Gaywick after Vincent's episode? I hope that you did.
Me too.
But I'm just curious. I wonder if we should resurrect our telephone number.
Oh,
so yeah. People can respond to them in some way.
I have another reason we should resurrect our telephone number that I can't remember right now, but I will remember and I'll tell it to you later.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to Fated Mates. I'm Sarah McLean. I read romance novels and I write them.
And I'm Jennifer Prokop, a romance reader and editor.
And this week we're doing a read-along because we haven't done one in a while.
We haven't. Okay, so we are going to be reading... Okay, we kept calling them Harlequin Desires. They are not. They're Harlequin Blazes.
Blaze. Blaze is the hot one, everyone.
Yeah.
But it doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't. You're going to look down at your phone right now. A few years ago, at some point, we had made a joke about how if we were in charge of Harlequin, we would be coming up with lines, and we joked that we would have one called Harlequin Inferno. Mm-hmm. And Kelly actually made a mock-up of you and I on the front of one of these covers.
Yes. Perfect.
And it said Harlequin Inferno instead of Harlequin Braze. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want.
I was, fun fact, a Blaze subscriber.
Oh, me too.
For some length of time. But this predates ebooks. I mean, like,
yes.
This was like in the early days of the line because I was so excited that there was a... So wait, I feel like we need to go back.
I know.
We need to talk. Look, if you've been listening to Fated Mates for basically any length of time, we've talked about the history of category romance. You should, you know, the Rebecca Romney episode, we talked a little bit about that. We talked about it with Steve Amidown. We'll put a bunch of links to other category romance, kind of broad category romance links. We did a read-along in the, was it season one or season two, where we like found our wildest categories from back in the day.
We did a read-along of Naima's categories last year, right?
Right. So, long story short, category romances are much shorter than what we call single title romances, which is why often when we do an episode about them, we talk about
a couple
two or three instead of one, because you all are fast readers and you can keep up with us. And so, but there was a time, and Beverly talked about this in her Trailblazer episode, where there were 20 lines of romance novels. Like, there were 20 different brands. And so as readers, you know, you could read Harlequin Presents or Harlequin Blaze or, you know, Candlelight Ecstasy or...
And those still exist. Like, different lines exist, but now it's just really Harlequin.
What used to be every major publishing house had its category line, right?
Sure.
Like, Kensington had, like, Arabesque and Dafina, and then Harlequin had all of its lines. I mean, and Harlequin at some point probably had 30 lines running concurrently. And then there were Love Swept, and there was Silhouette, and there were, you know, all these different places where you could get these kind of short, quick, delicious reads. Now, many of those lines have been shuttered.
Well, and they're always kind of adjusting and readjusting them, right? So Harlequin probably still has 12 or 15 different lines, but they're really, you know, there's, and some of the classics, Harlequin Presents, Harlequin Desire, but now, you know, it's like Harlequin Suspense or Harlequin, there's a, you know, a lot of actually Harlequin lines that are essentially probably, you know, Closed Door or like Christian, because those are pretty popular in, you know, in the places those books are sold, right? Like grocery stores or whatever. So
Blaze
is gone, right?
Blaze is gone. I mean, when Blaze was invented, I remember when Blaze was launched and it was like, this is where the hot books are going to go. And it was because Desire had been like kind of pushing into something more. And Harlequin had these very rigid rules about
what goes where.
What could be in these books. And I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves trailblazer-wise, but we eventually, soon you will hear from somebody who will explain, like, the kind of rules situation. But there is, you know, Desire started to feel hotter and hotter,
mm-hmm.
which was great for me.
For us, yeah, right.
And then it was like, somebody at Harlequin was like, pause. They can't get any hotter, so let's start Blaze. And then Blaze started, and then that's when I became a Blaze subscriber. I almost instantly subscribed because I knew I was going to read all those books.
Of course. Well, and it's interesting because now in Kindle, the way that works is you can get essentially, well, I mean, obviously not Blaze anymore, but with Desires, where you like one ebook price and you get all four that happen in a month or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are like now
you can
digital
get these
things.
From libraries too.
Yeah, well. Right. Absolutely. So I think that, and what I'm going to do in show notes, I still haven't quite figured out. There's like a little tech thing I'm trying to figure out, which is how to link to a specific page in a PDF that's online. Someone out there is like, that's dumb and easy, but I've been trying. Anyway, because in the Rebecca Romney catalog, she explains essentially like the 80s like category romance wars and like what caused them, like essentially what caused the rise of Silhouette in as a direct competitor with Harlequin. And it's fascinating. So, you know, there's a lot of really interesting history about when publishers thought they could make money off of books like this and when they couldn't, mm-hmm. essentially.
Well, so Blaze the Line mm-hmm. began in 2001, in mm-hmm. August of 2001. And, I mean, it makes sense. That's right.
Yep.
Right as paranormal started. Like, mm-hmm. well, we've talked about this before, that we really marked 2000, last season, we marked 2000 as, like, the moment where, massive shift in romance. And so things that sort of predate 2000 are things that we've always sort of thought of as, like, old school.
Right.
And things that came, you know, that come after are, and maybe it is, I've always sort of felt like we dance around this, not you and I dance, but, like, as a genre, we dance around these definitions and these, like, markers being about sex in yeah. large part because we don't want to be perceived as by the outside world as being, like, just about sex, even though, like, women are allowed to have sex. Like,
right.
It's fine.
Right.
People are allowed to have sexual, like, identities and feelings.
Right, growth and, right.
But I often think that that's why we dance around The Flame and the Flower as, like, a modern,
yeah,
as the kind of one of the foundational texts, because nobody right. wants to say the obvious thing, which is, like,
sex
there are orgasms
page.
On page, right?
Right?
There's, like, there are real sex scenes in that book. And I think that right around that moment between 1999 and 2001, that's when, like, sex starts to really
ramp up in a big way.
And
yeah.
not, like, obviously it's been happening on page before then, but, like, we start to see, like, concrete nouns.
I was going to say, right, the elimination of the velvet cave.
Yeah.
Right? His manhood, you know, things like that.
And sex scenes start to get longer. Like,
yeah,
you know, Stephanie Lawrence rolls in with her 25-page sex scenes and, like, changes the historical game. And we talked right. about this when we talked about Devil's Bride. But, like, before Stephanie, sex scenes were not.
Miss Bev has also talked about that, right? Like, when we went back and read Indigo, we were both like, wait, this book is hot. Now, this would have been, Indigo was, what, 1995?
Right.
So, in some ways, I think she was, you know, she had read the tea leaves,
right.
maybe, about that, right? A trailblazer, if you will. And so, I do think that some of that is, you know, these dates are always a little mushy. Somebody before was doing it really well. Somebody later was slow to catch up, but it is really interesting to me. And then when did Blaze shutter? When did they close it? Do you have that date? When was the last blaze? These were 2016.
It was really recent because I remember people being really upset.
Yeah, like, wait, are you kidding me? There's no market for this anymore? What?
It looks like the last one was June of 2017. Well, Suzanne Ruby's Easy Ride.
I wonder if that's just straight up competition from KU.
It has to be because that's what I was going to say. So in 2001, we've talked about this before, there were no ebooks. Mm-hmm. Like, it was print only. Every bookstore existed still, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we were still looking at Walden and B. Dalton and Borders. Barnes Noble and Borders. Like, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around the vast difference of the bookstore landscape in 20 years. I mean, like, the number of bookstores that just disappeared because Amazon. So, I don't know. When did Amazon open? Right around
late 90s. I mean, late 90s, but they didn't really become Amazon until.
So, we are looking at, it took until, there was another almost decade, I would say, before indies and self-pub authors were really taking off in huge numbers. Like, we saw as this was moving forward, this is when so many of these authors who had written 100, 150, 200 category romances were finally able to get those books back for themselves, right?
Right.
So I think we talked about this before, but it's worth reminding everybody that categories have a very short lifespan. All mass market romance has a short lifespan, right? So, and that's because it's a numbers game. There just isn't enough shelf space. So to give you an example, a book of mine comes out the last week of August. I have about 6 weeks of like what we call
shelf time,
real shelf life. Like, I'm privileged enough that my books get, you know, often stay on the shelves after that, but you know, you sell the bulk of your books in the first 6 weeks.
Yeah.
It's not like in literary fiction or, you know, in other genres, YA, you might have like a long, like lingering life. And then you hit the New York Times list on week like 25 because your book has finally like found its audience. In romance, if you don't hit on week one or two, like you're not going to hit.
Well, now you might if
unless
you
you're on TikTok. Become
unless you're right. But even then, that is a very small set of books.
I mean,
and the other thing that happens though, this is the way the romance reader works. Though, of course, everyone knows this because they're out there doing it. Is you do find an author you like, and if they have a backlist,
well, yeah.
But no, not everybody is finding the backlist at the same time. So I would imagine that's like a steady sales force in the back, right? In
right.
your
and
stable
then,
of books, but not
I mean,
like,
this is, if you all are interested in like this kind of minutia, we can do an episode where we like answer questions about like the business. But
we are going to do this at our next episode because our next episode is with two authors who have a lot of publishing questions. So as people are listening to this, one of the things I'm going to recommend is like, respond to us on Twitter with these questions because I think actually this might be coming.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah.
So we can do as much as we can. Like if you ask us the questions and I don't know the answer off the top of my head, we'll try and figure it out. But my point about this is so I write what's called single title, a bigger book, a thicker book. But these books, when they come out 4, 5, 6 at a time in the month, they were coming out and you would get them, you know, if you were a subscriber or you would walk into B. Dalton and you would buy they would be on the spinner and you would just buy the whatever books you wanted. And then that was it. Like they went away because next month there were another 4, 5, 6 books coming out in the same line. So they would literally just pull off all the Harlequin Presents and put them all back in.
Yep.
The new ones in.
Right.
And what's interesting about this is that then those books just poof.
Yeah.
Disappeared. You can't get, which is why Rebecca Romney finding the first 500 Harlequin.
Love Swept or whatever, you know, right?
Yeah, whatever, was unbelievable because it was just like, I mean, it really is like a unicorn. Because these books just are not designed to stay in print. That said, it was a boon for the writers who had started writing early in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, because when Amazon launched Kindle, well, actually when Sony launched, like they're, you know, the remember the Sony e-reader?
Yes.
You know, when all these kind of, when there were whispers of this new format, that this ebook format, and we all said, like, no one's ever going to do this. E-books.
Right.
Like, this is not the way people read. These are not real books. Like, I can remember having these conversations as a reader. Like, I want to hold my book. What nonsense.
Right.
But we were all, I mean, you know.
We didn't know what we didn't know.
I know. We didn't know. So the, but smart authors like Barbara Freethy were like, hang on a second. I want, and they went back to their contracts and they were like, I want all these books. I want the rights back to them. They're out of print. Contracts for books have often have what's called a, you know, an out of print clause in it, in them where you, it basically says like, if you sell less than say 200 books in a period, in a 6 month period, the book is considered out of print and you get the rights back.
Yeah.
And Barbara was like, hang on a second. I want them all. I want every one of them back. And at this point, all the houses, all the publishers were like,
sure.
Okay. Like, what are we going to do with all these books? And so Barbara got, you know, I don't know how many. We should have Barbara on.
Yeah.
But she got all these books back and then just quietly put them up. And for people who were early adopters of the Kindle, Barbara Freethy books were... what was there.
That's
so
what was
like,
there.
I'm going to read all these books. And Barbara's books are great. They're great categories. And so she became the best-sellingest author of all time on Amazon. Because she was just really, I mean, talk about somebody who was just brilliant from the jump.
And saw that market.
Right. Saw the future, knew what she wanted, knew how to capitalize on it. Anyway, all of this is to say, category is fascinating.
It is.
Because I think it takes a very specific kind of writer to pull it off, to do it well. And then on top of it, readers are, it's one of the few places, I think, in all of publishing where readers are committed to a brand.
Yes, right, exactly. Like, this is my line and I'm sticking to it, right? Like, I was, you know, I mean, I'm like, I will read a Harlequin Desire, but not of this. I will read a Silhouette Intimate Moments, but not a Silhouette Special Edition, right? I mean, so yeah, people have their the ones that they like. And then you're kind of like, if they're serving it up to me, I can, and that was a great way to discover new authors, right? It was a great way to sort of get somebody on your radar and be like, oh, I really like this person. So yeah, it is really interesting. It's really interesting to think about category this way. But I also
it's like dish detergent. And I don't see that with like I don't know how else to describe it except to say like you went to the spinner and you just like took all of the presents off the spinner.
Yes.
And like that was it. Those were your books for the month.
I'm not sure that we came up with the phrase romance reasons when we were talking about category, but romance reasons is where category lives. And what I mean by that is
where it shines.
Yes. It's like really where we see like the glory of romance reasons, because there are a lot of ways in which like the setup of a category romance is just the setup. There is no sense at all that the author or the reader really expects. Like, once it is put on page, it is essentially fact, right? And so you can really go into it with a really different set of expectations where you don't have to sort of question. And there's a really specific way that it plays out that we can talk about with these books. And I think there's also a way in which big, like, convoluted backstory things also become their most distilled, simplified, right? So it works both at an exposition level, here is the setup, but also it works at a plot level. And so, I mean, exposition is plot, but I mean like plotting in terms of how characters interact with each other.
1,000%. And this is why when we look at big indie authors, even the ones who are writing more words than, I mean, these are 60 to 70, 75,000 words, like not, they're short. But even when we look at like big indie authors writing today in 2021, even longer, you can see the bones of categories in them.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, because like indie authors have largely, I mean, again, I'm speaking very broadly, but they tend to have a much more fine-pointed way of managing tropes. They tend to understand sort of intuitively what a romance reader wants in terms of emotion and like that sort of straight shot of plot.
Yes.
And these are things that come from category.
From category.
I agree. We've talked to, again, you know, coming soon in the Trailblazers, we're going to talk to a few people who wrote category and then wrote single title. Right. And you can really see how category teaches. When I do, for example, I teach a conflict course for romance writers, category is a great place to like learn.
Right.
It's a learning ground for a lot of the structural things that we talk about around romance.
I would agree.
Great category writers just write incredibly well. They have an intuitive sense of pacing, storytelling, like the whole thing. Because they don't have room for the fat, right? Everything has to be trimmed.
Right. So, okay. Let's talk about these three books then.
All of that said, whatever.
All of that being said.
45 minutes in.
I hope it's not that long.
It's not, I don't think.
All right. So these are, okay, so these are, this is a series called Men at Work. These are very loosely interlinked. I mean, they're really not, it's not even like.
Barely.
Barely, right? Like they'll mention a character, right? And so the tie that binds it all together is they're all set in a little Oregon town, I think Lost Lake or something. And the first one is called Her Halloween Treat. It is basically she's on the rebound. It's a rebound romance that works. Her Naughty Holiday, which is, I think, the best Thanksgiving romance ever written. And then One Hot December, which I was really contemplating why they didn't call it Her Hot December, because I feel like there's naming protocols.
It really should have been Her Hot Hanukkah, but
yes. And, which is what's really interesting is even though it has a Christmas tree on the front, it's really a Hanukkah romance.
Correct.
Or a romance about discovering Hanukkah, I guess.
And they were released, it's important to point out, they were released in three consecutive months, October, November, December of 2016.
Yes. These are numbered 9/12, 9/16, and 9/20.
A particularly rough time of our lives.
Exactly. God, these must have been like such a, ooh. I didn't even really, okay, let's not talk, that shall be not shall be named. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's, so in, and you know what else is really interesting, I was thinking about this, is these are all very, like, I mean, Men at Work is the title, but, you know, that could mean anything in romance, but these literally are, almost all of them, all of the characters are, like laborers in the sense that they are working on and building, like, houses, right, except for the last one, right? She's
my guy isn't a laborer.
Your
my
guy isn't
just a billionaire.
Your guy's
I mean,
just
he's
a
not
rich
a billionaire.
Guy.
He's like right. a he's a millionaire.
Yeah, but the first two guys are one guy is a one guy's a contractor, and one guy does like roofing and siding. And then in the third book, she's a welder.
She's the laborer.
Right. How do we want to tackle these, Sarah? Do we want to just what do we want to do except be like, they're great?
I know. We really enjoyed them. Okay. I think we need to talk about, so we've talked a ton about category.
Yeah.
Let's talk about holidays.
Yes. Like
the value of the holiday romance.
Got it. Okay.
Because I think that that's a lot of what's going on in these books is the joy. And it's interesting because I had clear favorites and I had a clear favorite. My clear favorite is the middle one.
Look, the other two are good. The middle one, the Thanksgiving one, is superb. Yeah.
And I think part of the reason why my clear favorite is the middle one is because it really leans into holiday.
Yes.
Like, we see the holiday on page. We see, like, all the pieces of holiday romance that we expect. Like, there's,
yes.
Except it's all sort of twisted and turned on its head. So that said, I want to just say, like, One, I think this is cool because I think this might be the first time I ever read a Thanksgiving romance. Mm-hmm. It might be the first time I ever read a Halloween romance.
Yeah.
It certainly was not the first time that I'd ever read a December set romance, but like there is this kind of, yeah. Tiffany Rice has this, you know, she's a pretty legendary figure in romance despite her youth. I mean, like she, I suppose like, I mean, everybody feels young to me now. Feels like we all grew up together. And so surely we're all, it's like, surely it's still 2005. Yeah. But Tiffany's books have always been really curious. Like they're not standard.
So she's really well known for a series called
The Original Sinners.
I haven't read those because there's a priest, so sorry, everybody. But it's like people love them. People are like, this is like, people are.
Yeah, like, she's not
true
new.
Fans.
Those came out in 2012. So, I mean, what do we know? What do I know?
I mean, she has like a devoted fan base for those. But then mm-hmm. she also has written some. These are not the only categories she's written. She wrote another one that was really great about a ghost. Like a ghost on the campus of like a boarding school or something that I also really loved. Mm-hmm. I'll have to look up the title. So she also, it's really interesting to me because I do think one of the things that I think people think, and I don't think it's true, and I think Tiffany proves this, is that you might start in category, but you would like leave it behind. And I feel like she's a really good example instead for someone who, like, every once in a while, it's like, I've got a couple great ideas that would be category length. Let me, like, bounce back in there and do my thing.
And she just kind of knows what instinctively where things belong, which is nice. But, like, for example, Tiffany was the first person to win a Rita with a queer character, with a bisexual character.
Mm-hmm.
She has always, like, dealt with kink, she's dealt with BDSM, she's, and always with like a really thoughtful eye. She is one of the first authors that I recommend to people when they're looking at like how to do that right, how to do it like with respect. And so I think she's just somebody who, she's somebody who romance respects and knows to turn to for, like, romance writers like Tiffany's books a lot. A writer's writer. Is that a thing in romance?
I think
it probably is.
I feel like it should be because it really is. It's great. I mean,
and
I think she's
great. She seems to be able to, like you said, like, she's just good at all of it. She sort of has an instinct for all of it. So, when you're writing holiday, though, there's this kind of promise of what you're going to deliver.
Right.
And
I think you're right that all of these are, like, a little subversive, right? So if it's a Halloween romance, then people are going to be in costume. But the way they are in costume in her Halloween treat is the people are in costume at a wedding. Right. At her Thanksgiving holiday, the Thanksgiving dinner is get the fuck out of my house. Right. Yep. One Hot December is not about Christmas.
But it's actually Hanukkah.
Right. Yeah. So that I think is like the cool thing is you're going to get what you expected, but in a different way than you expected with these books.
Her Halloween treat. Let's talk about that one.
Okay. So I've read all these books and own all these books in paper. The one thing you should know is for some reason, One Hot December is shinier than the other ones, and I don't know why.
Is it because of that goatee?
the paper is different. Anyway, her Halloween treat, I loved it. I'd read it before but kind of forgotten because I always usually reread mm-hmm. the Thanksgiving one. Okay, so Joey is our heroine. She is, it's actually horrifying. She lives in Hawaii. Her boyfriend works for an airline. Her boyfriend lives in LA. So she is going to go to Oregon for her older brother, Dylan, is going to be marrying his longtime boyfriend, Oscar. And so she's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to surprise my boyfriend in LA on my way to Oregon because I'll be, you know, on the mainland. And she knocks on her boyfriend's front door and his wife answers. And she had no idea that he was married. He'd been, years she had been dating this guy. He basically lived with her when he was, you know, because he also works for the airline. So he has, like, is splitting time between LA and Hawaii.
Sure.
So she literally, like, jumps in the cab because she's like, she was like, wait, maybe he won't be home, and flees home to a small town near Mount Hood in Oregon. And there she hooks up with her brother's best friend, a guy that she knew in high school, Chris Stephenson. And her best friend is like, listen, the best way to get over a man is to get under another one. And so she takes this to heart, and she and Chris basically jump into bed and have incredible sex.
This is the value of Tiffany's books. Like, there's just no, like, there's no moment for the characters where, like, one, they're just sex positive.
Yes.
Like, there's never a moment where, like, we shouldn't do this. Like, I don't know. It's like, does it feel good? Does it feel like we're going to be safe? Does it feel like we're going to respect each other in the morning? Yes.
Then let's do it. It's awesome. Listen, I loved it. Because I loved it. And I also was thinking to myself, have I ever read, like, a rebound romance before where you really are getting someone who is straight out of another relationship? And it's funny because the one I was thinking of is Careless Whispers by Cynthia Williams, which I put on the best of. This is something that happens where people are, like, bouncing right out of one relationship into another one. And it's great. Chris is, like, a contractor. He's been rebuilding these, like, little cottages for Dylan and Oscar. That's Dylan's new husband. And she is going to be in town for 2 weeks until the wedding, which is on her birthday, which is Halloween. And the wedding is essentially, like, an 80s-themed costume wedding because both Oscar and Dylan were born in the 80s, and they were like, we're going to have, like, an 80s costume wedding. Wear your 80s costume.
Gives Jen an opportunity to wallow in 80s references without feeling like the book is dated.
Well, here's the other thing I will say. Listen, the other thing I really appreciated about the 80s, so they get to the wedding at the end, and it really dives into, like, the kooky, wacky 80s shit. Like, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, if you're really going to dive into the 80s and you're not going to talk about, like, I don't know, you know, someone comes in a Goonies costume and
Yeah.
Exactly. It was all the obscure shit. And I think that it, you know, kind of made, there was, like, this, you know, real reason for it, not just, like, I'm, you know, 22 right now, but somehow I have, like, a only knowledge of the Meg Ryan oeuvre of rom-coms, right?
Right.
It was great. It was pretty low conflict. I mean, the conflict is she says to him, we're going to have sex for 2 weeks. We're probably going to break each other's hearts, but we know what we're going to do, but I'm going back to Hawaii at the end. Don't promise me you'll just let me go.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, but I love you. And she's like, you promised. And then they figure it out. And it was terrific.
But I think that that's part of what it's interesting because, like, Tiffany's, like, the original Sinners series is not low conflict. Like, that is pretty high conflict shit. Like, again, it just goes to her show. It's just clear that she has a really big bag of tricks.
Yeah.
You know, and because I mean, let's talk about the Thanksgiving book, but I want to come back to that low conflict thing when we talk about the December book because I think she does a really interesting thing in the plotting of the December book, but
yes, me too, and I want to talk about it. Okay.
So her naughty holiday, which we've talked about before on the podcast, but is a Thanksgiving book, which is sort of a weird, like, again, feels like Thanksgiving is one of those holidays that
Listen, I'm going to tell you why. You want to know why?
Yeah.
Okay. One, because nobody wants to fuck after eating much of turkey. That's
no, why. No. You just want to go to bed.
This is in a, not in the sexy way. In the, like, I'm too full way.
In a, you want to put on your Joey Tribbiani pants.
I think Thanksgiving can be a very fraught holiday. It's family. Maybe you have ambivalence about, I mean, there is a reason why when everyone talks about, like, talking to your racist uncle, it's over Thanksgiving.
Okay, listen. So we're watching, have you ever watched this? You don't watch TV.
Sorry.
But this is a Chicago set show. I did not know that this show existed. Happy Endings?
No.
You know the show existed? Okay. It was, like, I think it came out in like 2015. I don't know. Okay. It's on Netflix, everyone. It's basically like a 2015 Friends. It's mm-hmm. like they literally, I think it is six friends. It's three seasons. It's actually very funny and like very light. And Eric and I are watching this right now because, you know, we just are. Like, it's just yeah. something a little less like head sure. weighty. But it's set in Chicago. And so I don't know. But we were watching, so we've been binging it. And the other night we watched the Christmas episode. And I gotta say, holiday episodes of television shows, all those Thanksgiving episodes yes. of Friends, like, they sort of sell you a false bill of goods on holidays where, like, there's this mythology on television that you will spend your adult lives having holidays with your close friends.
Right.
And that is not that's accurate. Not how it goes. Like, instead, when you, like, grow up and you're an adult, like, you end up kind of feeling beholden to all of your multitude of families and having to, like, go through these fraught experiences with people who, let's be honest, sometimes you don't really care for.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. you're kind of stuck having this kind of mythologically important day with people who maybe you wouldn't choose to have that day with.
As a teacher, there's also a lot of like really, the mythology of Thanksgiving goes deeper than just like, you know, I love my family. It's this perfect day.
Oh, yeah.
That Pilgrim and Indian bullshit is so awful. And actually, there's a really great video. I'm going to put it in show notes from the Smithsonian Museum of the American Indian, where they interview a man who I think is I think it's Cherokee, but it might be, I can't remember his tribal affiliation. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm now spitballing and didn't do my, like, bring it to the table with his name. But he talks about, like, Thanksgiving being about, like, the story we like to tell ourselves as a country.
Mm.
So it's both at a personal level, the story we like to tell ourselves about our family or about who we are. But, I mean, so Thanksgiving is, ooh.
Thanksgiving is a lot. I mean, like, yeah. Thanksgiving is a lot, too. Many of you out there have young children and are trying to, like, navigate how to tell that story to your kids and, like,
mm-hmm. you know. This video is great.
In our house, yeah, we just, we skip it all yeah. together.
No, and you know what? I will put some links to, like, really great picture books by Native authors. Like, there are resources out there so you do not have to feel like you are, like, selling this really mm-hmm. toxic and, you know, racist story about, like, pilgrims and Indians and all that stuff. Yeah. So
I feel very blessed that we are doing this, that we are raising a kid in public schools in New York City where they don't do this. But I know in other places they do, yeah, do this.
Right. So if you are a person who has struggled with this, please check show notes and I will do that. Well, some of that stuff will be in there. It's really interesting. But, you know, I think that it's interesting to have a Thanksgiving romance where Clover essentially, even though she's a successful businesswoman, her family thinks she is just like this garbage human who dropped out of, you know, college and has like a dumb job where she rings up people at a nursery, as opposed to a multi-million dollar business that she owns and runs by herself. And so she has hired this little teenage, like, kind of 17 or 18 year old girl is her to work in the shop. And this girl is,
I love this,
setting up Clover with her dad.
I think it's so cute. It really is like the perfect rom-com, like, yes, movie rom-com setup.
I will also say, you know what I was thinking about this book is? Okay, so, you know, dad jokes are like a thing, like a dad joke. This mm-hmm. book is actually truly funny, but like in a sexy dad joke way. I don't mm-hmm. know how else to describe it. Like, they are constantly like joking and punning with each other. His name's Eric Fields, by the
Tiffany
way.
Tiffany is very funny. Like, there's that's the entire of the dialogue of her One Hot December is like silly sex jokes.
Yeah, she's funny, and I've heard someone say before that, like, she, like, is a great person if you need someone to punch up your jokes.
So, oh, that's funny.
If you know Tiffany, I guess that's like a...
Yeah, if you're writing rom-coms.
Yeah. It's truly, truly funny.
Yeah.
So this is honestly, I don't think I've ever loved a scene more. So the daughter, whose name I'm kind of spacing out on right now. What's the daughter's name? Ruth. Ruthie.
Yeah.
Okay. Ruthie is going to spend the week in LA with her mom for Thanksgiving. Her dad picks her up to take her to the airport, and then he shows up back at Clover's, and he's like, oh, she forgot her phone here. And it turns out she totally does it to, like, set her dad up. And so Ruthie has set them up, and Clover says to Eric, well, would you by any chance, like, you're really cute, be my, like, fake boyfriend at Thanksgiving for my
family?
She's
also a virgin.
Yes.
Which I think is fascinating because she's 30 years old and a virgin.
And he doesn't know this. We don't either. And he says to her, he's like, yeah, sure, that actually sounds great. Can we have real sex all week? She's like, yes. So you're like, awesome. Okay. It's
virginity
awesome.
Is a construct.
It's awesome. This book is so, honestly, this book is perfect.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about what happens at Thanksgiving dinner? We're going to spoil it, everybody.
Oh, well, she's just, everybody treats her terribly. It's what, this is your kink.
This is
your
my
full
kink.
Fully. So you should tell her, tell everybody.
Okay, here's what I loved about this. So she says to Eric, she keeps saying, like, my family's going to be awful. But promise me you're not going to start anything. We're just going to
just get through
Brennan Barrett. And they have been essentially having great sex for 4 days. Like, he's like, you know, it's so terrific. They've been having great sex for 4 days, and now it's Thanksgiving, and, like, her family shows up, and they're terrible to her. They are terrible to her in every way that they can be terrible. They are dismissive of her. They make a joke about how much weight she's gained. They call her a college dropout. They don't bring the nieces and nephews, which were the only part she was looking forward to. And she'd done all this work and, like, fun things. Like, they were going to build birdhouses with Eric. It was so cute, right? And so, and then, though, one of them insults Ruthie, who is not there. Because Ruthie, one of the reasons, she'd gotten into trouble at school. I'm not going to get into it. It's great. She got in trouble at school, and her mom essentially says something very disparaging about Ruthie. And so Clover finally loses her temper, and she curses out everyone at the table and throws everyone out, including Eric. And he's like, what did I do? And she's like, they insulted your daughter and you let them. And he's like, but you told me not to
You
say
told
anything.
Me not to say anything.
And she kicks them all out. She's like, get
it's
out.
It's like, it's living the dream. Let's be honest.
I know. I think
everybody out of my house.
Get out. Get out. We're just going to eat what's left here without you. Go.
Exactly. I'm going to eat this stuffing with a fork.
Standing over the stove.
Out
right?
of the pot.
The whole entire pie for me. It's amazing. It was great.
It's great. And it is my favorite in large part because it is like fantasy fulfillment for me. Like,
oh, yeah, right.
You know, which maybe makes me a real bad person. But
and I was also thinking, you know, there's been a lot of fake dating books lately.
Yeah, but this is a cute one. This is a cute version of it because it handles fake dating in a really interesting way. One, the timeline is exceptionally short.
Yes.
I find fake dating to be the very best trope when it is extremely tight. Like a weekend, night, like a wedding, where there is just like, such a finite amount of time because it amps up all the emotion of it and it makes it feel like at the end, like there is an end. When it's like, we're going to fake date for 6 months, then I'm like,
are you though?
There's just it feels often like
flabby.
Yeah. Like the writing in very rare, with the exception of rare cases, like you just can't keep it tight.
Yeah. It's hard to sustain. Right. Absolutely.
So you're totally right. And I think also the other thing that, you know, Tiffany understands that when you come to a category, you come to it for tropes. You come to the October book for Brother's Best Friend.
Yes.
You come to the November book for fake dating. And then you come to the December book for boss, like, boss employee, which is a totally, like, again, she sort of flips the whole trope on its head in the December book.
We've mentioned how funny this book is. This book is really funny, but also, like, so Ruthie is this, like, kind of eco-feminist. I don't know. I just made up that term, but that's maybe what she called herself. And like, mm-hmm. sort of the whole thing about like what people deserve from their lover and all this is really great. But also like Clover's last name is Green and her brother's name is Hunter and her sister's name is Kelly. And I was literally like, can you fucking imagine the torturous childhood these kids must have had with those names? Oh my God. What were these parents thinking?
I mean, but that's part of Tiffany's humor, right?
Yes, exactly.
I did have one other thing I wanted to say about her Halloween treat before we move forward, which is that the back cover copy of her Halloween treat has the line, "What a dick." And I'm like, oh, that, like, this yeah. is a, which, you know, whatever. A lot of you are like, so what, Sarah? But, like, the idea of Harlequin putting that line on the back cover of something, it just shows there are all these kind of little moments where you start to see the genre
yes.
shifting. And it's interesting because this is right before they end Blaze. And it's like they knew
yeah.
that what they were doing, like, they had to make changes in order to compete with what was mm-hmm. happening in indie and self-pub. And they were doing what they could, clearly.
Yes.
Making right. a bid for an audience that had never really come for Harlequin.
That's a good point. I think about this a lot because if you ever read, okay, this is before we get to December. If you ever read the original back cover copy of A Love Swept, they are, it's florid. I mean, the prose is so, it's really amazing. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that they, like, have rewritten them now to be sort of, like, more straight, right? Like, more like, okay, this is the boss, and this is what happened.
Yeah.
But, like
a clearer sense of the trope.
Yes. I mean, you sent me a box of these once, and I pulled them out, and I was like, oh, reading the backs of these, this is amazing. They are hilarious. I'll put some in show notes where you can see like a kind of before and then something yeah. that has survived essentially and been converted into an ebook, like how different they are. I mean,
I think it's really interesting. So there, you know, this is a pause in our episode, but they're re-releasing 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake in March.
Yeah.
And that's my first historical romance, like adult romance. And we rewrote the cover copy because it's 12 years old.
Right.
And it's not hugely different, but
yeah, things change.
The world changes and the genre changes and there's a new cover and there's new copy too.
Right.
And so I do think, I don't know, romance is so cool.
It is, right, it's exactly. So cool. I love it.
It's so fluid and it allows itself to change, which I think is so interesting. And anyway, so One Hot December is the third book in the series.
Yes.
And like you said, it has a Christmas tree on the cover and a Christmas wreath on the cover. But the level of holiday in this book is like really light touch. There isn't a whole lot of holiday happening here.
Right.
And she does this really interesting thing trope-wise. So the trope is boss employee, the heroine, Flash. Her real name is Veronica, but she's a welder. And so her friends, if you've talked about an 80s.
Oh, yeah.
An 80s cut. Her friends, because she's this like hot lady welder.
Yeah.
They call her Flash, which is short for Flash Dance.
Which Mr. Reed's Romance and I watched that in the past couple years. It's like there's barely a plot. It's like a music video.
Yeah, movie. It's like hot welding and also dancing.
And bike riding around Pittsburgh. That's what it's about.
Gosh, setting a movie in Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Awesome.
The Rust Belt, you know.
Sure. So everyone calls her Flash. She's the only girl. Woman, she's not a girl. She's the only woman who works at this like
Sure.
This construction company that's run by Ian Asher, who is, you know, hot and wealthy and runs this construction company. He's the son of a guy who's like a state representative. State senator who's about to run for the United States House of Representatives. Like, there's a lot of, like, money and power and name in this family. And Flash is, like, covered in tattoos, and she has, like, a shock of fire engine red hair, and she's a welder, and she's super badass. And when it starts, you're sort of dumped into this, like, world where she is, she, like in chapter one, she walks into his office, and she's like, they start talking, and as a reader, you're like, oh, there's something here. And then they start to have, like, full-on, like, sexy flirting.
Yes.
Like, and or it's not really flirting, because but it's, like, very sexy, the talk.
Yes.
And it's clear that these two have had sex before. And it turns out they had sex a month earlier. Or, like,
6 months.
I'm sorry, 6 months earlier. They had sex 6 months earlier. And it was a one-night stand, and he was like, oh, shit, this can't happen because you work for me.
Now, this is where I would say my exposition and plotting is just romance reasons, right? Like, she's like, I'm out, I'm quitting. And you're like, okay, boom, they had a one-night stand. This is what's happening. She's quitting. She's going to work for Clover. Like, it just is all, like, you're like, okay, boom.
That's the connect. She's going to work for Clover. But she's also an artist. Like, she's got this, like, very cool life.
Yes.
Like, this is the most old school heroine job book.
Yeah, I'm a welder.
Is, right?
Absolutely.
And that's the other thing about categories that we love is there's always, everybody always has cool jobs.
Yes.
So she, like, leaves, and he's, like, basically there. And then almost instantly, they're basically, like, together. Like,
yeah, he chases having, after
her. Because now she doesn't work for him anymore.
Right.
So they can, so he calls her over ostensibly to, like, I don't know, fix a fireplace. Great. Romance reasons.
Sure.
And she comes over.
She is a welder, Sarah.
Yeah, I mean,
no one else could fix the fireplace. Great.
If you know a welder, I guess that's what you do. And so
he, in his she ski comes chalet, over, he
and they have another. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, like, everybody skis, and there's, like, it's just, it's this, like, wild story. Anyway, so she, and then they, like, start to have sex, and, like, within, I don't know, 50 pages, she's like, I'm in love with him. I've been in love with him from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so there's, like, a little bit of an unrequited love thing going on here, but it's very, like, everyone's all in from the jump.
Yes, absolutely.
And that is, again, going back to what you said about the first book, the Halloween book, it's low conflict in a lot of ways because, like, these two just are super into each other.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that in this series in particular, the men are very into the women. In every single book, it's the woman who's like, I don't. I mean, Clover's
not in this one.
Yeah, right.
She's,
yeah, that's true.
I mean, Flash is into him.
Although she's pissed at him. So I guess maybe that's where that, yeah.
Right. She feels like he like, they had this shot, and then he basically, like, left her. But to be fair, he did. He was her boss. Although I know that it makes me trash, but I've literally never cared about that. Not one time.
Yeah, me neither. That, I don't care about that either. And look, I'm not
and
saying.
And in real life, you should not do this, but, like, this is romance.
Sure. And you know what? I understand there are a lot of people who are like, I can't read them. I'm, like, trash for this trope for sure. Here's the part, though, when I was reading where I was like, this is a real streamlined, like, plot point. So if this had been a single title book, the reason that he broke up with her would have been way more of a, like, reveal. So basically, at some point, maybe halfway through, I can't remember because I was reading on a Kindle. Okay, so spoiler, you're going to skip this if you are going to read this later or whatever. He's like, well, I know that was real shitty the way I broke up with you. But as it turns out, a guy who worked at the business saw us together and tried to blackmail me. And so then I had to call the cops and tell them that I was being blackmailed. And then I had to call this guy back into the office. And
but it all happens, like, off page.
Yes. It just, and that's where I was like, in a longer, right, in a single title romance, this reveal would have been handled so differently.
Well, it would have been another 20,000 words.
Yes, because it would have been on page, and then it would have been like 6 months later, right? And, you know, it would have ended with him like breaking her heart and him being like, the lawyer had told me I had to do it. And instead, it's like a page or two where she's like, well, that seems kind of shitty. Why didn't you just tell me? And he's like, well, what would you have done? She's like, well, I probably would have told everybody we are sleeping at work. And he's like, and then I would have had to fire you for this. And she's like, aw, darn. Like, I mean, so that, but that was it. I had this real interesting epiphany where I was like, in a category romance, the things that cause real life, you know, if they just get handled differently, the plotting of that event, it's like, I have to put it on page to explain why he broke up with her in such a shitty way. But it was literally like, I'm just going to explain it to you. Boom.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's great.
It was great.
And then yeah, it's great. And then Mrs. Sheinberg, can we talk about Mrs. Sheinberg?
Yes.
The next door neighbor. So Flash has this next door neighbor, Mrs. Sheinberg, who is in her 80s and like is basically her bud.
Yeah.
You know, and has lived this whole Ian story with her.
Yes.
And like she knows that Flash is in love with Ian and she knows that's one night stand. And like she has, she's a little bit, like a fairy godmother
where
like there's a dress that and a makeup, like she does Flash's makeup one day and like she lends Flash this like beautiful dress, this vintage dress that she had when she was young, that she wore with her husband.
Yeah.
And like there's just really magnificent relationship with an older neighbor in this book. And I think we've talked about this before, but I really love it when there's an older woman figure for the heroine who just, like, is there and, like, reminds me of Jessica Trent's
grandmother. The grandmother, right?
Because this has this very real sense of, like, is sex positive, understands the way the world works, understands, you know, at one point Flash comes home in the at midnight because she can't spend the night with Ian because she doesn't want to, like, give him too much of herself when he doesn't love her. And, he, you know, the light is on in Mrs. Sheinberg's house. Or, and Flash, like, knocks on the door at midnight, and Mrs. Sheinberg is like, oh, why didn't you spend the night over there? You know, like, it's a very charming relationship that you would see in a lot of other books as being, like, with a friend who is of a comparable age and a future heroine. And in this case is with, you know. And I also just want to point out that there's also talking coming off of her naughty holiday.
Yes.
There's also the dad, Ian's dad in this, who's, you know, about he's a politician. So, you know, you're conditioned to immediately think he's going to be a dirtbag. Is not like he's a really, again, decent dude who just loves his kid and wants him to be happy. And despite the fact that there's a lot of perception of like, well, the dad is not going to approve of Flash.
Yes, because,
and the dad is
right.
Like, there are all these ways that Tiffany is subverting the stories that we expect. Like, because there is a moment where talking about, you know, flashbacks, there's a moment where Flash remembers that or recounts she had tried to attend a party at the Ashers, like, estate, and had gotten basically turned away by the campaign manager for the dad, not by the dad, and not at the request of the dad. Like, there's just a really nice, there are a couple of really nice relationships in this book that are rare, I think, in category, because there isn't often space made for these other characters.
Even going back to Clover's book, and then I do want to talk about the Hanukkah thing, because we talked about it, but haven't talked about it. Even the thing I really liked about the end, so there's the cathartic moment where Clover throws everybody out, but the way that it resolves itself is Eric overhears a one-sided conversation that Clover is having with her mom where she's like, you just can't talk to me like that anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to hear you call me your little dropout again. Like, and it's about boundary setting. And I think that in any book with like a family, right? I think we talked once about another person who does a lot of really good stuff with like boundary setting is we talked about that one series of that Ruby Lang wrote where I think it's Clean Breaks, the one with the
house.
No. The one.
The medical one.
Yeah. There's one with a doctor and her family where she's setting really clear boundaries. And I just really love that with Clover. And so I do think it's nice to have the trilogy end instead with like these positive family relationships.
I do too. Yeah. It's really lovely. And then I think there's something else going on here. Like you said you wanted to go back to the Hanukkah thing. Unsurprisingly, and I guess I hadn't pinged it the first time I read this series, but I pinged it this time. Mm. The hero is Catholic, and it's on page that this family is Catholic.
Yes.
And one, that's just rare. Like, you just don't see religion called out mm-hmm. in blazes very often, right? So the hero is Catholic, his father is Catholic. And at one point, the father kind of says to him, like, is she Catholic? And he's like, no, she's like nothing but very respectful of religion. And then there is this Hanukkah thread through it, partially because of Mrs. Sheinberg.
But what happens is Ian tells her that his mother died when he was a baby. He doesn't have any real memories of her, but that she was Jewish. And so Veronica says to him, well, then you're Jewish because it's matrilineal. And he was like, I am? I mean, he's like, he didn't know. And so then, like, as a gift, she's hanging out with Mrs. Sheinberg. And
she gives him a menorah.
She makes him a menorah.
Oh, yeah.
She makes it. And it has, like, ivy.
She's a welder.
She's a welder, so she can make you a menorah. And there's, you know, it's, like, engraved or has ivy on it. And then she, like, teaches him. She asks Mrs. Sheinberg about the candles and the proper way of lighting it. And they, you know, like, it's really tough. I mean, I'm not.
It's really darling. And yes. Then there's one moment, like, they have this, like, super hot, intense sex scene. And then she comes downstairs, or, like, she comes out of his bedroom. And, like, he has lit the first two candles on the menorah, like, quietly on his own.
Yeah.
And it's really lovely.
Yeah. I thought so, too.
And it's just, it's a moment where, yeah, I'm really charmed by these books because I think that they are a good example of, like, somebody who understands implicitly the rules of the category and then figures out ways to subvert them and twist them and break them. And I really like them. This One Hot December is very different. It's a very different kind of book.
Yeah.
And it's really, it rides that line also of being very emotionally, like, it's a really lovely holiday story wrapped up in this, like, filthy sex.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, this book's just really
dirty.
If we were in charge of Harlequin and there was a Blaze Inferno, these could be our first three books because they are.
We should say that they ended Blaze and then they started Dare.
Yeah.
Which is.
Aren't they ending Dare too?
Are they ending Dare?
I don't know.
Who can keep track?
I know. It's fascinating.
I keep talking. What were you going to say?
Listen, you know what I'm saying? I want someone at Harlequin. I want them to hire me. I just want to work there and, like, be like, sit in on the meetings where they decide, like, you know, hey, we're shuttering Blaze and opening Inferno. We're going to shut down Desire and open up Tepid.
Tepid. That's not a great name for a line.
Sorry, I'm kidding, Harlequin. I love you. I love you, Harlequin.
Yeah, it looks like Dare ended in June.
Yeah.
So. I mean, this is the thing. Go read Tessa Bailey books. I don't know what to say.
I mean, I do. I think that it's KU. I think a lot of it is KU. But apparently on the TikTok now, they're like, why are all these books so not hot? We want hot back. So
wait, who is saying that on TikTok?
I don't know. Somebody told me they were saying it on TikTok.
That they want the books to be hotter?
Yeah.
And I was people aren't out here writing hot books.
I guess, you know what I would say? But come on, Sarah. Like, you and I both know that you know what? I don't want to get in trouble. So I'm just going to stop talking right now.
No. Go read Tessa Bailey.
There's plenty of hot books out there for everybody, but these books are hot and delightful and apparently on Hoopla, so you can get them from your...
Oh, fun. I got to figure out Hoopla. FYI, those of you who don't follow us on Twitter, this week we've been talking on Twitter. We talked about the fact that you can pay $50 to the Brooklyn Public Library and get access to the collection of the Brooklyn Public Library via ebook, which is great. I happened to read her One Hot December on the Brooklyn Library's
Her Hot December ebook
reader.
Yeah.
And Hoopla, I got to get Hoopla set up.
So
I don't know if they have. They have that.
They have that. So I, you know what, Sarah, I'm going to put a pin in this, and I'm going to add this to our talking about the library and checking out ebooks. We're going to talk about it at our the big Let's Talk About Books thing that's coming up next week. So it's going to happen, everybody. But you know, this week it's Thanksgiving. You may enjoy cooking. You may, like me, order your entire Thanksgiving meal, all of it from Whole Foods. It doesn't matter. It's going to be delicious. And if you need to bounce people out of your house, then do it. We support you.
Find inspiration in Tiffany Rice, who would not stand for it if somebody mistreated you or your boyfriend's daughter at the table.
There's something about that that deeply spoke to me in the way that I will put up with a lot of bullshit from people, but the minute they go after, like, someone I love or a child, it's like game fucking on. And I really did find this whole book to be, they were perfect. It was so fun to reread them.
Yeah. Well, you also really do love a book where somebody stands up for
Completely.
Themselves and others at a family meal.
Hardwired right into the system.
That is part of your personal id list.
Yes, it is.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's great. Eric literally says to the shitty older brother, he says, we fucked where you were sitting earlier this week. I mean, he is like, and the brother's like, that's disgusting. And he's like, no, it wasn't. It was great. Get out. I'm leaving too, because she told me also to get out, and we're going to respect her boundaries. It's amazing.
Great. It's great. Anyway, pour one out for Blaze.
Pour one out for Blaze, everybody.
We miss you, Blaze. We miss you, Dare. You know, go read some hot books. You could listen to other episodes of Fated Mates, and generally, we don't recommend books that aren't hot. So
sometimes we do. We're well-rounded, Sarah.
We loved that Hannah Khan book.
Exactly.
But generally, Jen and I,
we'd like
lean
it
toward Inferno.
If only we were in charge, Sarah.
Fated Mates, Inferno, new line.
Obviously.
My friends, happy Thanksgiving if you are doing that here in America, in the United States. If you're not doing it, we hope you have a nice long weekend. It's also Black Friday. I hope that you're not like getting, you know, crushed by people in Walmart. No, that's terrible. Wait, let me start over.
This did go to a dark place so fast. Woo.
So we hope that you're doing well. Make sure that you, if you're going to buy books, you're buying them early and often from indie bookstores because of supply chain issues. Don't forget, there's probably going to be some kind of cardboard shortage because it's 2021 and
who knows,
that's how it's going to go. So we hope you're buying books for your friends. Don't forget that you can buy signed books by lots and lots of writers. Just tweet it, writers who you love, and say, can I get a signed book from you from some local bookstore? Often the answer is yes. Fun fact, once I tweeted at Jason Reynolds and I asked if there was a local bookstore where I could buy a signed book from him, and he actually went into the local bookstore and signed the book that I ordered, which was great. That was before he was like
Jason Reynolds.
Though. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend tweeting at Jason Reynolds, but that's my fun Jason Reynolds story. But you can tweet at authors and ask them where you can get signed books. Mass market paperbacks fit great in stockings if you're a stocking filler.
There you go.
I'm just going to say. And don't forget that you can order the Fated Mates 2021 book pack.
Yep.
From Old Town Books. We'll put links in show notes. You can get the 8 of the 10 best books of the year, according to us.
Including a one great... Oh, no. The Great Category Romance isn't in there. You'll have to read that digitally, everybody.
Yep. Yep. So... find us at Fated Mates, at Fated Mates Pod on Instagram, at Fated Mates on Twitter, and fatedmates.net. And we love you all and hope that you're not, hope that you're, you know, having sex where your brother-in-law sat.
Oh, we're the worst or the best. Bye, everybody.